from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, we discuss a major new study out of Spain that tells us the traditional Mediterranean diet is healthier and will make those of high risk less susceptible to strokes and heart attacks. We'll get analysis and reaction to the study, which is being hailed by many as groundbreaking. And we'll hear from famed physician Dean Ornish, who is critical of the study. Forum begins after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. If you eat a diet rich in olive oil, nuts, vegetables, fruits, and fish, you may be doing more preventative health than you might have even thought. Certainly, we've been told for quite some time now that a Mediterranean diet is far better for us. But a new study of over 7,400 at-risk people in Spain reveals that 30% of strokes, heart attacks, and death from heart disease can be avoided by high-risk people. The study, which appeared on Monday in the New England Journal of Medicine, appears to prove that preventive efficacy of eating like those who regularly eat a Mediterranean diet will indeed help prevent such things as strokes and heart disease. And there are many naysayers on this highly praised study. One of them is local famed physician and diet book author Dean Ornish, who we will hear from in the course of this hour. But we'll also hear from some other doctors who have a decidedly more supportive view of this study. And first, we'll hear from Gina Collada, who's a medical reporter for the New York Times and who has certainly been covering with her usual diligence the story. And Gina Collada, good to have you back on Forum. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be back again.
Yeah, I'd like you to just break this down for listeners. There were three control groups. And, you know, what makes this study seem so bona fide in so many doctors' eyes?
Well, actually, there has never been a large, rigorous diet study with endpoints like heart attacks, strokes, deaths from heart disease. There's almost never been one at all. And when there were one, nobody ever found any effects. So many people thought that if you have people at high risk, like these people were, they hadn't had heart attacks, but they were taking statins and blood pressure drugs and diabetes drugs, you weren't going to make much of a difference with a diet. So what was the big shock was the study was ended prematurely after less than 5 years because the people who were eating the Mediterranean diet, which, by the way, is not what most people, including the people in the study, thought it was, when they ate this diet, they reduced their risk of heart disease, heart attacks, strokes, and deaths from heart disease by 30%. That's as much of a benefit as you get if you have high cholesterol and you start taking a statin. So that was an amazing, really very strong result. The control, there are two groups that were on the diet. One was given supplementary nuts, and on this diet you are allowed to eat all the nuts you want. There is no restriction. These people were actually given nuts as a little gift, and they were, how much nuts they were eating was being assessed because it you get a chemical in your blood when you're eating these nuts, and they could see how much they're actually eating. The other Mediterranean diet group was getting supplementary olive oil. You're supposed to eat more than at least 4 tablespoons a day, and they were given olive oil as a gift. And they could measure how much they're actually eating by looking at their urine, where there's a telltale chemical. And you're allowed to eat as much olive oil as you want, but at least 4 tablespoons. You must eat a lot of nuts and a lot of olive oil. The control group was given the kind of diet that most people advise for heart patients. It was a low-fat diet. They also were assessed, but they had a lot of trouble staying with it. So the low-fat turned out not to be low-fat. It turned out to be more like a typical diet. Now, the reason I said that a Mediterranean diet is not what many people think, on our website at the Times we have a little questionnaire, and you can fill it out and you can see, you get points for each thing, how close you are to a diet. And I think a lot, I was surprised, I thought I was on it, I'm really not. I think a lot, or I said, oh, that's how I eat. It really isn't, because there's a lot of things you may not do, like legumes, like peas and beans, at least 3 times a week. Fish, at least 3 times a week, one of them has to be a fatty fish. Unlimited, believe it or not, what they call black chocolate, which is dark, which is chocolate with at least 50% cocoa. If you're used to drinking at least 7 glasses of of wine a week. Doesn't matter if it's white or red. There's a lot of details in there. You're supposed to make a sauce of tomatoes, and you're supposed to simmer it in a lot of olive oil and with garlic and onions, and use it at least twice a week on pasta, rice, or vegetables. And I asked the researchers, where does this come from? And they said, they just sort of said, okay, it's a package. It's not like the olive oil does it or the nuts do it. It's what they said people used to eat in the Mediterranean, although they're not eating it so much now. And so the diet that they followed, it takes a commitment, I think, for many people to do that kind of a diet. If you want to make that commitment, this study showed that you could have a real effect.
You
and
also,
by the way, the low-fat diet has never been tested like this, never. It's all supposition. Or it's all, oh, it seems to lower cholesterol, but it's not. You have definitely you have fewer heart attacks.
Well, as I said, we'll be hearing from Dr. Dean Ornish about
that. He hasn't tested it that way. You might want to ask him.
Yeah, well, I will. How were they able to test or factor in compliance, though?
What they did, well, for the olive oil and the nuts, they could do it with the biomarkers. And they had people come in periodically and fill out these questionnaires on what were they actually eating. Like, you know, how often are you eating fish? How often are you eating nuts? They would consult with dietitians. And the people seemed to, you know, certainly by the biomarkers, they could see that people were changing their diets like they were supposed to with the nuts and the oil. And when they first started coming in, and often on some of their visits too, and they'd fill out their little questionnaires on how many times did you eat fish last week and stuff. They weren't really doing that great, but they got better. They got a lot better. And everybody moved their score pretty high up on the Mediterranean diet scale. Perfect score is 14. They got more like 10, 11. Nobody got, in general, people were not doing it perfectly, but they got a lot better than they were at first.
Talking to Gina Colata, who's with us from New York City, medical reporter for the New York Times. Of course, when a study like this comes out, as I'm sure you're well aware, and most of our listeners are well aware, there's not only those who naysay for whatever reason, but there are suggestions that, some of the funding may have come from, or there may have been an involvement of nut makers, of winemakers, and so forth. Any evidence of that? Any traces of that? Olive oil makers, too, of course.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, these are expensive studies, and people do have to get support from somehow. And obviously, the winemakers, the nut makers, the olive oil makers are going to have an interest in this outcome. The question is, did they change the data to try to – I mean, did they actually change the number of heart attacks that were assessed by doctors in hospitals in order to make the diet come out so the way that the that the winemakers might want it to come out. And it's very hard to see how they managed to manipulate data to make it look like the Mediterranean diet was good when it really wasn't. I think in the end, when you say, okay, there's a conflict of interest, you have to say the conflict of interest led to this outcome. This was a study that was rigorously performed, that was where the outcomes were something that you couldn't mistake. Did somebody die of heart disease or not, or have a stroke or not? They were not the people who were deciding whether you'd had a heart attack were not the olive oil makers. So you could say, I don't trust it because the olive oil makers donated money to have it done. But you could also say, well, where's the data manipulation that made it come out the way that olive oil makers wanted it to come out?
Do you have any thoughts on the recommendation to eat more fish as opposed to mercury fish threats or risks?
I actually don't. I don't give recommendations. I just report on the evidence. And I actually do think this diet, though, is quite a commitment, seriously. And, I mean, I said to myself, well, you know, gee, maybe I should do a Mediterranean diet. I don't really think I have a heart disease risk, but why not? Then I looked at it and I said, it really is a commitment. So you're raising another issue that people might want to think about. I have no idea. I mean, I didn't make the study.
But from your, veteran science reporting perspective, I'm getting the sense that you feel this is a pretty bona fide and valid study.
Well, you see, I don't decide on my own because I'm not a scientist, but I spoke to a lot of people who said, this was like a study like almost no other, and they did not question the outcomes because of the people who were helping to sponsor it.
Well, I'm pleased to have you back on Forum, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's always good to talk to you. Thanks a lot.
Gina Colata, medical reporter for The New York Times. We have a couple of physicians who I think are pretty bullish on this study. Cesar Molina is a cardiologist at El Camino Hospital in Mountain View, a spokesman for the American Heart Association. He's also co-founder of the South Asian Heart Center at El Camino Hospital. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you back with us. And likewise with Rita Redberg, who's here in studio, cardiologist, and professor of medicine at UCSF Medical Center. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to have you here. Does this mean, because we're talking about high-risk people in this study for the most part, does this mean that everybody should go to the Mediterranean diet and run there? Or what does it mean in terms of particularly those who are not necessarily at high risk?
Well, I mean, as Gina said, and I think it's hard to argue that we all would like to have a lower risk of heart disease, stroke, and dying. And although the group was picked to have increased risk, there were some diabetes. If you look at the actual table, they're pretty similar to most Americans. I mean, the body mass index was 29, which is overweight, but not even obese. And a lot of Americans are quite already well into obese, which there were 13% smokers, I mean, which is about what we have in the U.S., maybe a little bit higher here. We have more people with diabetes. So I think this group was pretty representative of most Americans. So I definitely think no one could go wrong following this diet, low risk or high risk.
What about all the wine? I mean, particularly since we did a program just recently on the effects of alcohol, and there were correlations between alcohol taken in a certain amount and breast cancer and a number of other things, including just overall health.
There have been a lot of studies, all the other ones being observational or epidemiologic, where you look at what people eat and then how long they live and whether they drink wine or not. And there are a number of studies that suggest people that drink wine live longer and have healthier lives. And when they were observational, it was never clear whether that's because people are drinking wine with their very healthy meals of fruits and vegetables and grains or whether there was something in the wine itself. But I think this study, although it wasn't specifically addressing whether the wine was what was helping to reduce heart attacks and strokes, it clearly is part of a healthy lifestyle. And I think living here in Northern California with lots of good wine and lots of good fruits and vegetables, it's a great message.
Well, on the other hand, Dr. Molina, some statistics that are perhaps somewhat of concern, statistics that I got from you, sevenfold fast foods now, suggest maybe less access, perhaps, to the kind of healthy foods we're talking about here?
That is correct. And it's actually very important to try to define what we mean by the Mediterranean diet. And anyone who travels through southern Europe realizes that the Europeans may not always eat like we think they should be eating. But the difference is that when they have a sandwich with jamón serrano, the ham is paper thin. While you would never be able to, no one would serve you a paper thin ham piece in a sandwich in America. So the portions are very, very different. But in America, here in the USA, we have seen a sevenfold increase in the development and deployment of fast food restaurants over the last 30 years.
Which does suggest perhaps less access than we'd like to have, or that maybe people in a Mediterranean diet have. There are a number of factors. I know, in fact, roughly about seven factors that are traditionally associated with aging. How much really does diet play into that? Because I've been reading this Mario Martinez, who says more important than the food we eat, more important even than our genetics, this is how we experience joy. He did this study with all these centenarians, which I thought was fascinating. But from a perspective of diet, I mean, I know both of you counsel your patients to eat well, and yet there's a lot of conflict here. Low-fat diet is what people are hearing, and that's what they've been hearing for quite some time.
Well, actually, Michael, the thing is that we pay a lot of attention to the diet, to the plate in front of us, but we pay very little attention to the diner. So it's not only the issue what is in the dinner, but also how the diner digests the food. So we know that exercise improves digestion. Exercise modulates how we digest the food and the effect of the food on our physiology in HDL, triglycerides, and postprandial oxidation. We know that sleep affects how we digest our food and how we search for food. So out of those seven factors that you mentioned, that are the Alameda Seven, and those factors are sleeping 7 to 8 hours a night, having no excess of alcohol consumption, up to 5 drinks per day, not smoking, maintaining daily a regular good healthy weight, exercising about 3 calories per kilogram, that is 210 calories per 70-kilogram person. Out of those seven, five of them have to do with our mouth. So there's definitely what we put in our mouth, and that is cigarettes, alcohol, and the food that we eat has a lot to do with our health and our capacity for successful aging and longevity.
Well, I know there are a lot of people who are listening with concern and particularly concern about their diet. The one thing that struck me in the study, Rita Redberg, was, a number of things struck me, but particularly the fact that it's supposed to be just as efficacious to follow this diet as to be on statins. So does this mean by logic that those people who are on statins can, if they follow this diet, simply forego the statins?
Well, as we have discussed before, I think there are a lot of people taking statins that are getting absolutely no benefit from it, whereas I think everyone would get benefit from this diet. So, I mean, statins have benefit for very high-risk people, secondary prevention. For primary prevention, the data is quite weak. And the other problem, as we talked about with statins, there are a lot of side effects, muscle problems, fatigue. I see patients every week in my practice
who
have a lot
too.
Of memory loss. And this diet doesn't have any of those undesirable effects. And so, yeah, I think if this diet was a pill, it would clearly be a blockbuster drug. It takes a little bit of work, but I actually don't think it takes that much work. And what I like about this diet is it's a lot easier to follow. I mean, a low-fat diet may or may not be good if you really follow it. But the problem is people don't like it. And also you can eat a lot of bad food on it, you know. The whole last 20 years while we were talking low fat, we've seen an obesity epidemic. I mean, you can be low fat and high sugar. You can be low fat and have very high salt. You can be low fat and have a lot of processed foods. And all of those things are not good for you. And that's in this diet, you eliminated the processed foods, eliminated the high sugar. You know, the other thing about the Europeans is they tend to eat more slowly, they tend to enjoy their meals, and they have more meals at home. You know, the fast food, and you do see more fast food now in Europe, and I'm afraid that's, we have a lot of great things in this country, but I don't think fast food has been one of them. And, you know, you do see McDonald's everywhere now, or other fast food restaurants, don't want to pick on that one. But this diet, I think, is a lot easier to follow. I mean, I couldn't tell you what the percent fat is in my diet, although I certainly watch what I eat. But I can tell you I had 2 servings of fruit, I had 3 servings of vegetables, and I had some lentils. And so this is a lot more doable. And for that reason, it works. So I definitely think that if I was going to pick one thing to try to live longer, it would be this diet and not the other.
And the data is very convincing because there was very little, as Gina Colada said, of anything resembling this kind of study or this much evidence.
Exactly. It was a well-done scientific study. They took a lot of people and they followed them for 5 years, and it would have been longer for real meaningful events, not just measurements in their blood of their cholesterol got a little lower. I mean, what difference does it make if your cholesterol's low if you're going to drop dead of a heart attack? It's much more important to look at clinical events than to do lab measurements.
Cesar Milena, there are 4 other groups that tell us a good deal about what we're talking about here. Can you reference that for us?
4 groups?
4 study groups that were done sort of in conjunction with some of the results that we're seeing in this
study.
Well,
they had a group that they defined as the control group. And that control group was actually there was a diet that was consumed by the subjects prior to entering to the study. Throughout the period of the study, they more or less stayed as a control group. In fact, they had a 37% consumption of caloric consumption of fat. So they didn't change that much there. While the people in the Mediterranean diet had about a 41% fat content in their diet. Then the other 2 groups, one was a Mediterranean group in which they were given added olive oil, but in this case, virgin olive oil, and another group that were given a sample of, which was actually 30 grams of nuts to be consumed daily. 15 of those 30 grams were actually American walnuts that were sort of gifted by the California walnut.
That's another reason why some have raised their eyebrows.
That is correct.
I asked a question before, and I'd like to get back to about fish and mercury and what would be more advisable. But also, What about bread? A lot of people are cutting out bread these days. All this talk about gluten and carbs and everything. Is bread a big part of this Mediterranean diet?
It is, actually. And they did not control for bread consumption. In fact, wine consumption was about the same in all three groups. So they did not control for wine consumption in the control group. People who were drinking were advised to continue drinking. But one thing that was mentioned earlier was that about the Mediterranean sitting down at the table to eat. The dietitians encourage all the participants to sit twice a day for at least 20 minutes to have their meal. And it goes back again to this issue about the diner versus the dinner.
As opposed to eating on the run and
exactly.
What so many people do. What about, Dr. Redberg, what about fish and mercury as opposed to eating much more fish? Some thoughts from you?
Sure. So there certainly have been some suggestions that, you know, mercury isn't good for you and we're getting more mercury in our food. And, you know, I think you have to weigh. It's hard to have the perfect diet, and you have to weigh there may be some risk to eating, you know, the tuna and the salmon and the sardines that were recommended. But I think they're outweighed by the benefits overall of this diet. You know, there is some suggestion, actually, there's a lot of problems in the other food that was eliminated in this diet, like the red meat, you know, and the other, the processed foods, and that, you know, because of the way we farm and grow things in this country, that we're concentrating more chemicals than we need to be. And that it's probably better for us not to do it. But in the bigger picture, you're still better off eating fruits, vegetables, and the fish we currently have, which may or may not contain mercury.
And I know there are many of you who would like to join this conversation, so let me invite you now to do that. In fact, our toll-free number is available to you, and feel free to call us with any questions or comments you might have about recent studies. In fact, came out Monday in the New England Journal of Medicine about the Mediterranean diet and how pretty dramatic number, 30% effect on those with heart disease or those who have had a coronary or are at risk for a coronary or for a stroke. You can join us again at our toll-free number, which is 866-733-6786, and we do welcome your involvement in the program. The number again to call, 866-733-6786, or email us. Our email address is forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment. And you can also, of course, go to our Facebook page or tweet us, and our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum. But one way or another, we'd certainly welcome your involvement in the program. So, Dr. Molina, you're still going to advise me not only against soda pop, as you did on a couple of occasions, but even diet soda?
That is correct. In this study, they discouraged the participants in the Mediterranean diet. They encouraged them to stay away from soda. But soda intake is associated with an increased risk of diabetes. In fact, the consumption of one carbonated sweetened drink per day is associated with a twofold increased risk of diabetes.
Well, we've had Robert Lustig on who, you know, is preaching.
Yes, exactly. And the same is true
for his choir here,
diet
but,
drinks.
But why diet drinks? I mean, I assume when I had diabetes too, I could drink diet drinks and wouldn't have to worry as much about sugar.
You know, I don't have an explanation as to the physiology or pathophysiology by which diet drinks are associated with that. It may just be related to the overall diet of someone who is addicted or consumes diet soda. Or it may just be that they confuse the mind, they confuse the brain, and they actually miscalculate their caloric intake. And in fact, I had never seen I mainly see obese individuals drinking diet drinks. You rarely see thin individuals or normal weight individuals drinking diet drinks, with one exception in front of me.
We will continue, by the way, and both Drs. Molina and Redberg will stay with us. We'll also talk to Dean Ornish, who has made quite a name for himself in terms of low-fat diets and his particular Ornish diet. And we'll hear from you, our listeners, when we return on Forum. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Mediterranean diet, which emphasizes things like fruits, vegetables, olive oil, and fish, has long been promoted as a healthy approach to eating. And a major new study, which was published Monday in the New England Journal of Medicine, provides even more reasons to eat like an Italian or a Spaniard or a Greek or at least the way they used to eat, maybe before fast foods began to flood their markets as well. But among the findings, people on a Mediterranean diet had a 30% lower risk of major cardiovascular problems, and that's compared to people who followed a low-fat diet. And we spoke earlier with Gina Collada, medical reporter for The New York Times, and Cesar Molina is with us, cardiologist with El Camino Hospital in Mountain View and a spokesman for the American Heart Association, and Rita Redberg, who is a cardiologist professor of medicine at UCSF Medical Center. Just want to get something sort of for listeners to savor here, which is what Dr. Molina put in my ear while we were there for the break, and that is studies in Japan. A lot of people look to Japan as healthier, and then people from Japan move here and they get unhealthy, and we've seen that kind of paradigm over and over again. But fascinating to learn because, again, the science is so difficult to pin down in any empirical way. Talk about what happens when you have high fish diets in Japan to the children. They have a higher IQ. I mean, they have higher fish than those who don't eat as much fish.
There is no science connecting fish consumption with poor neurologic outcomes or mercury poisoning associated with clinical events. And in fact, I don't know what car you drive, but I have a fantastic Japanese car. I have a fantastic Japanese camera. And these are built by fish-eating individuals who do not show any signs of retardation or mercury poisoning.
All right, I want to bring Dean Ornish in this discussion as promised. He's founder and president of Preventive Medicine Research, which is a nonprofit institute. He's also a clinical professor at UCSF. And Dean, good to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome.
Thanks, Michael. Glad to be here.
Well, let's talk about this diet and this study because you've expressed some concern about the results and particularly where they might lead people away from low-fat diets. Your thoughts?
Well, it's just the way that you introduced this segment. You said that the study showed that there was a 30% reduction in overall cardiovascular events compared to a low-fat diet, but neither of those statements is really true. The first is that they weren't on a low-fat diet, the control group. They were given a piece of paper and told to follow a low-fat diet. They weren't given any support at all in the first half of the study. And as a result, they didn't make any changes. The authors wrote that we acknowledge that even though participants in the control group received advice to reduce fat intake, changes in total fat were small. They were actually non-existent. They went from 39% fat to 37% fat, which is not even statistically significant. It's way higher than even the American Heart Association guidelines of 30% fat, or what we found was required to reverse heart disease, which is 10% fat. So the first statement that the Mediterranean diet is better than a low-fat diet is simply not true because the control group wasn't following a low-fat diet. The second statement is that it reduced overall cardiovascular events. But if you actually read the study carefully, as I've done, it showed that the only statistically significant reduction was in stroke. There was no statistically significant reduction in heart attacks, in cardiovascular mortality, or in all-cause mortality. But the reduction in strokes was so great that when they pooled it all together, the overall average went down. So the real accurate statement about the study would be that the Mediterranean diet reduced the risk of stroke when compared to people eating a regular diet, not compared to those eating a low-fat diet. Now, there's certain elements of the Mediterranean diet that I think are great, and certainly the Mediterranean diet is better than the way that most people eat. But that's a different statement than what this article purports to show.
So it's an inflated sense of the conclusions, as you see it?
Well, you know, it seems like they went out of their way to bash low-fat diets because, for reasons I can only speculate on. But it's, you know, like I say, if they're not following a low-fat diet, how can you say something's better than something if they're not really doing it?
You know, your institute is a nonprofit, and I've known you for years, and I know how dedicated you are to health. And yet there are people posting things on Facebook like, well, Ornish has some skin in this game and that sort of thing. And you say what to that?
Well, of course I have skin in this game because I've spent the last 36 years doing studies proving what a powerful difference these changes in diet and lifestyle can make. We showed for the first time that you can actually reverse heart disease. This study didn't show that. Even in severe heart disease, there was some reversal after a month, even more after a year, even more after 5 years. We found the more closely people followed the diet and lifestyle changes, the better they got at any age. We found the same diet and lifestyle changes could stop or even reverse the progression of men with early stage prostate cancer, which we did in collaboration with Dr. Peter Carroll, who's the chair of urology at UCSF and the late chair of urology at Sloan Kettering, Dr. Bill Fair.
You may recall we talked about that on forum with you and when
That's
those
right.
results came out. What about those?
And by the way, to finish, we also found the same diet could change gene expression and turning on and turning off hundreds of genes in 3 months, turning off the bad genes that cause prostate and breast and colon cancer and heart disease, turning on the good genes that protect us. We did a study with Dr. Elizabeth Blackburn, who, as you know, got the Nobel Prize 3 years ago for discovering telomerase, and we found that that went up by 30% in 3 months as well. Same diet and lifestyle intervention. And the more closely people followed it, the better they got. And as your telomeres get longer, your life gets longer. So the more we look, the more reasons we find that this is an optimal way of eating.
And you feel that the low-fat diet is indeed far superior to the Mediterranean diet?
Well, it's, you know, low-fat doesn't really do it justice. I think an optimal diet is, like a Mediterranean diet, is rich in fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, soy products in their natural forms. It's high in omega-3 fatty acids. We've been supplementing that with fish oil or flaxseed oil or things like that for 20 years. So there's a lot of overlap in the two diets. It's also low in refined carbs like sugar and white flour and white rice and so on, which, by the way, the so-called low-fat group was encouraged to eat more of, which, again, just kind of biases the study. And it's very low in processed foods. The difference is that I think that there is added value if you're trying to reverse disease to restrict fat, particularly the so-called bad fats like saturated fats and trans fats, as well as making all these other changes.
Well, I want to get our listeners involved in this, but before I do that, I wonder if Rita Redberg, who is your colleague over at UCSF, or Cesar Molina, who is a spokesman for the American Heart Association, have anything to say about what essentially Dean Orsch has said, which is this is a biased study, and both of you seem pretty bullish on the study. Rita Redberg?
You know, I think it is a great study, and you might understand Dean's sentiments, and I agree, he's very committed to health, but whether you argue that people couldn't get low-fat or not enough, I think is really relevant to the point that a diet only works if people are able to follow it. And one of the great things about this study is that people were able to follow it and they could stick with it. And, you know, a low-fat diet is very hard for people to follow. And people, you know, very few people might be able to go to groups several times a week and participate in biofeedback, but the average American cannot do that.
This diet
was something that people could follow. When I counsel my patients in clinic, I can't tell them eat 10%, 20% fat. It's impossible for them to know. But I can tell them this is how many servings of fruits and vegetables you should get. This is foods you should avoid. And a diet that also includes a little bit of dark chocolate and allows you to eat wine, who could not love this diet?
Well, let me get back to Dean in a moment. First, I want to hear from Cesar Molina and your thoughts, please.
Well, actually, I think Dr. Ornish is correct in the sense that it is not a competition. And in this study, the so-called control that was supposed to be following a low-fat diet ended up consuming more or less the same diet that the other two groups were consuming prior to the intervention, which was the encouragement of the Mediterranean diet with the addition of olive oil on one side and nuts on the other. So the fact of the matter is that the fat content of the three diets was very close to 40%. So, and that is higher than what is recommended by the American Heart Association, which actually may be wrong in their recommendation, because it goes back to the diner, and that is, we now know that there are different genetic genotypes that respond to diet differently. Some individuals respond to a very, very low-fat, higher carbohydrate diet, while other individuals respond to a very, very low saturated fat diet. And that, we go back to apoprotein isoforms E. So, and I'm sure Dr. Ornish knows a little bit about that. The fact of the matter is that what we're talking about is having a plant-based diet. And I think that Dr. Ornish and the American Heart Association and everyone else recognizes the great value of a plant-based diet, which is actually the main component of the Mediterranean diet as well as the main component of the Dean Ornish diet. And lastly, the findings described by Dr. Ornish are real in the sense that a lifestyle can change your genetic material, and it can actually change how you express telomerase. But his program is not only a diet. It includes exercise and meditation stress reduction. And that is actually what the Dean Ornish program is, if I'm just speaking for him.
And it's a program that has had a lot of success. But, Dean, what do you say when you hear Rita Redberg say, probably, I think, accurately, in my judgment, it's very hard for people to follow your diet? I can speak personally about that.
Well, first of all, I'm a great fan of Dr. Redberg and great admirer of her work. So But we don't agree on everything, but this is maybe one of the few things we don't agree on, which is, to me, first of all, it's a very common myth and becomes self-fulfilling. If the doctor thinks that people can't follow the diet, then they say, oh, I know you can't do it, so why even bother? But we have data now from over 4,000 men and women who've been following this program at Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield in Nebraska, West Virginia, and Pennsylvania, three of the most challenging parts of the country. And they're getting 85 to 90% adherence to the program after a year. And they found that it cut their overall healthcare costs by 50% in the first year. Now, you know, the idea that, say, taking a statin drug like Lipitor is easy, everyone will do it, but changing diet and lifestyle to the degree we're talking about is impossible, is really not what the evidence shows. The evidence shows that only 30% of people who were prescribed Lipitor and other statin drugs were taking them after 3 months. Now, we can talk about why that is, but doctors don't say, oh, people aren't taking their drugs, we shouldn't prescribe them. They're saying these drugs are useful and, you know, you should take them. So I think we need to separate what's true from what's easy, number one. Number two is we found that there was a continuum, that the more people changed, the better they got. It's not all or nothing. But I do think that we need to tell people what's true and not necessarily what we think they're able to do, and to say, to the degree that you're able to make these changes, as we found in all of our studies, you're going to get better. And we found that there was a direct correlation between the adherence to the diet and the changes in their arteries and the changes in their prostate cancer, the changes in their genes, and even the changes in their telomeres. The more you change, the more you improve. How much a patient wants to change or a person in general wants to change is a personal decision, but I think it's very paternalistic to say, oh, I know people can't do it, so we're not even going to tell them that.
Again, Dean Ornish is founder and president of Preventive Medicine Research, nonprofit institute, and clinical professor at UCSF, and let's go to your calls. And we begin with you, Jennifer. Good morning.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is regards to weight. What was weight recorded and tracked during this process, and what is the correlation between weight and heart disease?
Yeah. Dr. Redberg?
Well, the interesting thing about this study is that these people didn't lose weight. As you might, they didn't change. They really changed what they ate more than how much they ate, although there were recommendations on portion size, and certainly portion size is important. But this was really not about weight loss. It was about what you ate.
Thank you for the call. Let me get as many of your calls
way,
in.
Michael,
go ahead, Dean Ornish.
Can I just clarify one other point that Rita had mentioned earlier, which is that it wasn't really a fair comparison to say that in this study that people weren't able to follow the low-fat diet, but they could follow the Mediterranean diet, because the Mediterranean diet was grouped. They were given their olive oil for free. They were given their walnuts, which contain the omega-3 fatty acids, which I personally believe were probably responsible for a lot of the outcomes, whereas the people who are so-called on the low-fat diet were just said, okay, go follow a low-fat diet. So they weren't given the same level of support, certainly in the first half of the study, and so I wouldn't view the study as somehow saying that it's easier to follow the Mediterranean diet because they didn't follow the low-fat diet they were asked to follow because they weren't given the support to do it.
All right, and let me get more callers on. Hershey, Pennsylvania caller joins us. Jan, good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering if your guests could compare and contrast the well-known difference in spin between absolute difference and relative difference. As I recall, the study only talked about a 30% relative reduction. When you look at the actual numbers, the difference in outcomes was in the order of 1%. And when I look at the study, you know, 95% of the individuals who were on the control diet did fine without any episodes of stroke, heart attack, or cardiovascular death.
Yeah, Cesar Molina.
I think that your analysis is correct. There's a big difference between absolute change and relative change. And this is actually, Dr. Redberg could talk a little bit about that in reference to her work with statins. But that is, it is true for many things that are sort of described in the medical literature, where the change, the absolute change is small. But then the relative change is much bigger. The interesting thing about the Mediterranean diet is that we're not only talking about cardiovascular events here. The study had to be ended earlier than expected.
They felt it was unethical if they
to continue.
Kept it up. Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah. But there are other changes that are associated with the Mediterranean diet, such that there is decreased incidence of cancer. There is enhanced longevity. And that is actually that just goes beyond just a 30% decrease in the incidence of stroke.
But again, it's compared to what, you see? I mean, if it's compared to a typical, you know, American diet or typical Spanish diet, no question a Mediterranean diet is better. But the the real question, is it optimal? Is it even better to go further than that? And that's what I'm arguing.
And one of our listeners writes, I'm getting hungry listening to this. Sounds absolutely fantastic to me. Chocolate for breakfast, sign me up.
Which I love, too, by the way, and we include.
But dark chocolate. I'm a milk chocolate guy. You know, anything that's more unhealthy is somehow always more alluring to me. Here's a listener who says, what should I say to my scientist father-in-law who judges his health by the blood numbers rather than what is on his plate? He eats a high-fat, low-carb diet. He eats anything that is labeled low-carb, drinks wine daily, and drinks diet soda several times a day. He had heart surgery about 10 years ago and has been on this diet since then. What does the study mean for people like this? Dr. Redburn.
Well, I think, unfortunately, it's not all about the numbers, you know, and I think they didn't measure, you know, cholesterol, blood pressure. I'm not saying those things are not important in a population level, but on an individual level, I think what really matters to us is that we're going to live better and we're going to live longer. And that was what they looked at in the study. And you didn't need to measure cholesterol. And I think we actually overemphasize cholesterol now, probably because we have drugs that can lower it. But it's not all about your numbers, you know, and how low your cholesterol is. It really is a lot more about what you're eating, how you're eating it, and exercise than it is about the numbers.
Well, I know that Dr. Werner sees the study as biased, but what does the study tell us, for example, about cholesterol that may be new or shed new light, especially with eggs? A number of people are asking about eggs here. Dean Werner?
Well, first of all, I agree with Dr. Redburg that the numbers don't tell the whole story. There was an article that was published by Stephen Smith in the New England Journal of Medicine a couple of years ago, and it was actually reviewing an article by Dr. Fu. And what they found, they were looking at people on an Atkins-type diet, a typical American diet, or a diet more along the lines of what I'd recommend. And what they found was that the numbers, the cholesterol levels and triglycerides and so on, weren't all that different between the groups. But when you actually looked at the arteries, they were like night and day. The people on the Atkins high-protein, low-carb diets, their arteries were clogged. These were mice. The mice that were on a typical American diet were kind of moderately clogged, and those on a diet along the lines that I'd recommend were essentially clean. But they were mediated through what are called non-traditional risk factors, changes in free fatty acid metabolism and other things like that. And so in our studies, we actually looked at the arteries themselves in humans, and we found that they got better and better when people made these changes. And so that's why I agree that it's not enough to look at the numbers. We have to look at the actual underlying disease process.
Well, underlying perhaps what you've said already, Dean Ornish, listener writes, I'm curious why this story is being framed as a competition between the Mediterranean versus low fat. Why can't both be used to promote health? And I think probably all of those who are here today agree that it can be. But also got a question here, Cesar Molina. What about drinking skim milk and yogurt? I have bone density problems and calcium pills are out of favor now, but the report doesn't mention dairy. Is dairy compatible with a Mediterranean diet?
It is. But you have to look at, you need to look at food from an anthropologist's point of view. And that is, in America, dairy, particularly cheese and pizza, are the most common source of saturated fat in the diet. But if you look at dairy products throughout history, most of the dairy products that humans have consumed have been non-fat because in the old days there was no homogenization. So the top would go, the cream would go to make butter or ghee. And then the regular daily consumption was skim milk, which was going into cheese, cottage cheese, paneer in India, and mozzarella in Italy. So the typical dairy diet throughout the history of humanity has really truly been a low-fat diet and not the American way or the new modern way in which we sort of bang the fat back into the milk.
Yeah. And just to build on that. You know, again, I want to emphasize it's a bit of a straw man to be, competing low-fat versus Mediterranean. First of all, you can eat a low-fat diet that's really bad for your health. You know, many low-fat diets are because they're high in sugar, you know, Snackwell cookies and so on. But there's a lot of overlap between the kind of diet that we recommend and the Mediterranean diet. Both diets are rich in fruits and vegetables and whole grains in their natural forms. Both include the omega-3 fatty acids. Both are low in refined carbs like sugar and white flour. Both are low in processed and refined foods. The only difference is that for reversing disease, and, you know, if people are, you know, they can start by making moderate changes, and if that's enough to get their goals, great. If not, we found that in order to reverse it, that it required a diet that was also lower in fat. The control groups of our study were on a 30% fat diet. Their arteries got worse and worse over time. But when they were on a lower fat diet, along with these other changes, they got better and better.
Well, apropos of your remarks, Dean, I'm looking at an email from a listener. It says 37 grams per day of overall dietary fat is not a low-fat diet, by American standards, where last I heard the average was 100 grams a day. But we're the fattest people in the world with the highest rates of many diet-induced diseases. Average slim, healthy European probably gets around 40 grams a day. And I assume Dr. Ornish is about to tell you that nothing over 20 grams a day should be considered low-fat, and to reverse arteriosclerosis, an extreme 10 grams.
Well, I think the real issue is that they didn't make any changes. You know, it's like, how can you say that someone is put on a low-fat diet if they don't change it? If their percent fat goes from 39 to 37%, and people tend to underreport what they're eating anyway in studies like this, and there's no significant difference, they weren't changing. So here again, I think the real conclusion of the study, and again, they weren't given the support to follow the change where they were in the Mediterranean diet. They were even given a lot of their food for free. So to me, the real conclusion here is the Mediterranean diet is clearly better than what those people were eating before. Total in agreement. But that doesn't mean it's better than a low-fat diet in the way that we've described, because they weren't following one.
Let me get another caller on. Bart, join us. You're on, Bart. Good morning.
Yes, hi. Good morning. I have a question. I'm actually a physician in San Francisco and have been involved in studies looking at the effects of diet as well as chronic stress, type A behavior on endpoints such as heart disease and mortality. One thing I would want to mention is in Dr. Ornish's studies, as far as I know, and I'm fairly well acquainted with them, that the outcomes of heart outcomes such as death, mortality, and recurrent heart attacks were not really the endpoints that were used in the studies that Dr. Ornish is talking about. In addition, the low-fat diets that Dr. Ornish is talking about are pretty had a difficult time in terms of compliance. I agree with Dr. Redberg in terms of even in San Francisco at UCSF, where I have been affiliated, they had a very difficult time recruiting patients and individuals to that low-fat, an Ornish low-fat study diet, and that, you know, and that is also in many other places across the country. I'm glad to hear that perhaps in these other states on Medicare that maybe they're getting better compliance, but I do not believe in my heart that there's a high degree of compliance with that low of fat diet.
Well, but you know, let me just jump in here. It's not what you believe. I'm not interested in your beliefs. I'm interested in what the facts show. And the facts show that we have data now on over 4,000 patients who've gone through our program with the 10% fat diet at Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield in three of the most challenging parts of the country, Nebraska, West Virginia, and Pennsylvania. They've got over 85, by their own analysis, 85 to 90% adherence to the diet. Now, that's what the facts show. Now, if you believe that a patient can't do this and you say, hey, I know you can't follow this diet, just take this pill or go on the Mediterranean diet because I know you're not going to change, and then the patient doesn't change, and then they say, see, I knew you couldn't change, it becomes self-fulfilling. We did find 2.5 times fewer cardiac events in these patients, which we published in JAMA in 1998. And so to say that people can't do it, it doesn't work, you know, it's too hard, it's just not what the data show.
Some people can.
That's right. And I don't tell people what to do, but I do believe in treating people like adults and say, look, here's what the facts show. The more you change, the more you improve. I'll support whatever degree. I never tell even my own patients that they have to change, but I also don't tell them that they're not able to change. I say, look, you decide what you want to do. I'll support whatever degree you want to do it. But in order to reverse disease, this is what we found it takes. If you don't want to do it, do what you can. And I'll support whatever degree of change you want to make. But I don't treat people like children and say, oh, I know you can't do it. It's too hard, so don't even bother.
Let me thank the caller. I want to get, as we've got a little time left here, get a few more calls on while we do have a few minutes. Vern, you're next. Good morning.
Yes, I have heart disease, and I use butter. I use a low-fat margarine. Would it be better for me to put virgin oil on my toast and my vegetables instead of just a low-fat, supposedly low-fat margarine?
Dr. Molina, what would you prescribe?
I would actually recommend that. And in fact, there's another study looking at olive oil, a Greek study, and they found that individuals who actually use olive oil exclusively as their fat in their diet had about a 50% reduction in cardiovascular events. And, you know, you can actually make cook a small baked potato, and instead of putting butter, you can put some olive oil and a little bit of Parmesan, and you have a fantastic meal. So that actually is, I think you're better off with the olive oil than the margarine.
Let me thank the caller. You know, the physician who called mentioned stress and type A. And I remember, you know, interviewing Dr. Friedman many years ago, who came up with that whole notion of the type A personalities. Do type A personalities, I mean, certainly stress is a factor, although I'm thinking about Dr. Martinez because I've been listening to him recently. He says there's a difference between stress and distress, and I like that. Do high-stress people eat differently as a general rule? It would seem that they do, Dr. Redburn.
They do eat
it's
differently.
It's possible because people tend to eat as a result of stress. I mean, one of the ways to relieve stress is by doing things you shouldn't do, drinking too much or eating too much.
So they are more unhealthy eaters, yeah, generally.
Yeah, and I think the important thing about stress is it's not as much how much stress you have, because we all have stress in our lives, and it's, I think, stressful to tell someone they should have no stress because a lot of things we can't control. But it really is more important for your health how you deal with your stress. And if you do it in unhealthy ways, like eating too much or drinking too much, that is not good for you. But if you deal with your stress by exercising, doing things, you know, do mindfulness, yoga, Pilates, talking to friends, you know, all those kinds of things are ways to de-stress that are still healthy for you. And so it's not just stress, but how you deal with stress that really matters for your health.
So, Michael, there was a study that was published in Circulation in November of last year showing that the practice of transcendental meditation was associated with a 47% reduction in cardiovascular events such as stroke, heart attack, and death. In a group that had coronary artery disease that was practicing TM versus another group that was just given sort of all, you know, full medical therapy and education, demonstrating the effect of stress and the effect of stress reduction in cardiovascular health.
I want to
how many doctors are recommending meditation to their patients, you know?
Yeah.
As you know, Medicare is covering our program, which includes meditation. But by the way, you mentioned type A behavior. It turns out that fortunately for type A people like me, it turns out that type A behavior is not harmful. Certain components of it are, particularly chronic hostility and cynicism. And if you can, you know, otherwise you can talk fast, you can multitask. And if you practice these simple meditation techniques on a regular basis, people say things like, I used to have a short fuse and I'd explode easily, but now my fuse is longer, so things don't bother me as much.
Seconds left. What should people be doing here, either Dr. Redburg or Dr. Molina, in terms of following the study? What changes should they make?
Well, what changes is that this should be very easy. Everybody has a fist, so we should have 2 fists of cooked vegetables every day, 1 fist of fruit every day, about 12 nuts daily, oily fish about twice a week, and have olive oil, chocolate, and a little wine here and there.
All right, to the chocolate and wine especially. Thank you for being with us, Dr. Molina, Dr. Redburg, Dr. Ornish, and Gina Collada. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.